Welcome to another episode of Ball Street, the QBL Stock Exchange. My name is Brett Ford. I'm your host here today with Chris Helly. Chris, welcome back. Glad to have you. And I know you had an interesting couple of weeks, but how are you feeling? How are you doing?
Doing all right. Had a little bit of a health scare, but on the other side, healthy side. So glad to be back.
We're certainly glad to have you back. Eric did a great job filling in the meantime, but we're here to talk basically the market value of fantasy football assets. Some players with their performance in recent weeks, their value has fallen. Some, their value has meteorically risen. But we'll start, as we always do, with a handful of injuries around the league. And some of these situations aren't necessarily injury. We'll get into that here in a second. Let's start at the quarterback position. CJ Stroud and Jaden Daniels both suffer in-game injuries this week. Stroud leaves the game with a concussion. Jaden Daniels exits in the fourth quarter with what turned out to be a dislocated elbow. Pretty gruesome injury. His arm was just kind of flopping around there on the ground. It was gross. And then the third quarterback that missed this week entirely, and we have it on the show sheet as foot/performance. And that's Kyler Murray for the Arizona Cardinals. Jacoby Brissett got the start. Kyler wasn't benched. He was on the bench. But not benched, but on the bench. So just kind of a strange situation there. How are we feeling about the QB landscape with these three names out? And kind of where do we go from here? Mahomes on the bye as well for week 10.
Yeah. So I think in each situation we've already seen each of these offenses with their backups in, like Davis Mills. He looked to be all right and serviceable for the Houston Texans for the rest of that game. Mariota's started a number of games already for Washington, and Brissett seems like he has just won the job outright in Arizona. So I think we already know what to expect from each of these injuries. And it's a shame if you drafted Jaden Daniels, and it's a shame for, football fans alike to see a young, talented quarterback go down like that. Same with CJ Stroud, Kyler, but I don't think for ripple effects wise, I don't think there's too many question marks as a result of any of these.
Yeah, and obviously, Daniels kind of a plug and play starter. Kyler and Stroud were those borderline guys where you probably, if you had them on your roster, you probably have another option that's halfway decent because you really couldn't count on them to begin the year. So hopefully the Jaden Daniels managers have an alternative they can turn to, whether it's on the waiver wire or on their bench already. We'll look at running back, where Aaron Jones suffered an injury for the Vikings. And preseason, we touted just Jordan Mason quite a bit. Obviously, Jordan Mason, the most likely to absorb Jones's volume if he does miss time this week. Any changes in the Vikings backfield other than what Mason might absorb?
No, when Aaron Jones first went down, all the coaching staff was saying how they see Jordan Mason as he could handle a full workload and be a bell cow in that situation. So I don't think there's really anything. We saw in the international game, Xavier Scott, came in for some passing down work, and that kind of dug into that game and that workload some. And there were some injuries to the O-line too. So I think there's a lot of context that was kind of needed with our little stint there with Jordan Mason being the lead back of the backfield. It was interesting this past week when Aaron Jones first came back. It seemed like they really wanted him to retake that role, and he looked great. So, it's definitely one to monitor, because if Aaron Jones plays, then I don't think Mason is really a viable starter. But if he's out and with the lineman coming back, I would be starting Mason with full confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And I know the Ravens have made some defensive adjustments recently that has improved their rushing defense, but still not a unit that I'm that afraid of. Move on to wide receiver, where a handful of fringe flex names have found their way to the injury report this week. Kayshon Boutte, Luke McCaffrey, and Matthew Golden each left their respective game. Boutte, obviously, with the Patriots, McCaffrey with the Commanders, and Golden with the Packers. The Packers landscape is really interesting. And I guess we'll go ahead and dive right in. Tucker Kraft tore his ACL also. So the pass catchers in Green Bay, the landscape has certainly shifted. And with Jaden Reed not quite ready to come back yet, what does that mean in Green Bay? And who are you maybe looking to fill that void?
Yeah, so Tucker Kraft going down is a tough one. I do have some belief that when Jaden Reed comes back, he's going to fill a lot of that role, you know, see a lot of that workload to kind of go his way. In the time being, you know, Dontavian Wicks is coming back, I believe. I think there's some work that could go his way. Dobbs is going to be, you know, he's been the most steady target share guy of the receiver group, it seems like. I don't think that this is a landscape that's really going to be, you know, Luke Musgrave steps up into that role and, you know, you're going to see a huge target share go that way. Well, they probably just end up leaning on Josh Jacobs a bit more.
Yeah, I love the Josh Jacobs shout. And I know he doesn't necessarily align with the roles that Golden and Kraft filled, but more volume available for air yards king Christian Watson is always exciting. If I'm going to take a shot in that Green Bay pass catcher room, I'm probably going to take it on the guy whose targets are the farthest downfield, and that's Christian Watson.
That's a great shout because, you know, this is an offense and they just lost to Carolina. That's getting some heat for not being aggressive. So that's definitely a great shout. I could see that paying off and being a little bit of a Jameson Williams light situation.
One more wide receiver that went down this weekend, or at least has an injury residual from the game. Brian Thomas Jr. seems like he's been knocked all season. Not never really injured, but just constantly hurt, right? Like, it's never enough to knock him completely out of the game, but always seems to just be on the injury report consistently. Winds up with a low-grade high ankle sprain. And things are changing in Jacksonville. We'll get into that a little bit later, but how do we feel about Brian Thomas Jr. this week?
I mean, if you're a manager, I luckily avoided the landmine across my leagues, but, you know, I'm sure just frustrations have built up by this point. I probably would keep him on my bench. This is an offense that we had a lot of hopes of being a high volume, you know, big pie to have a good slice of. And it just really hasn't come to fruition. And BTJ with the injury, you know, T-Law chemistry, it just doesn't seem like it's all clicking there. So this is a situation I'd probably be on the more hesitant side of for sure.
Yeah, pretty expensive draft capital on BTJ this offseason, and certainly has not paid that off yet. Looking at tight end, I know we talked about Kraft, obviously out for the season. Cole Kmet left his game with concussion symptoms, opened the door for Colston Loveland, and he kicked it down the rest of the way. Six catches, two touchdowns, including the game winner, over 100 yards receiving. You know, what are your thoughts on Loveland and Kmet in that timeshare in Chicago moving forward?
Yeah, so, I mean, a concussion is going to be hopefully short term, you know, if any time at all. And, you know, this is another offense that has a lot of variables with it. There were a number of guys injured this last week that helped pave the way. DeAndre Swift was out, so a lot of the running back workload went to Menungai, who looked fantastic. You know, Roshan Johnson was out too, which helped there. I think Luther Burden missed this last week. So, you know, if you have to look at things with all the context you can, when there's an offense that is missing a lot of pieces that, you know, there could be volume and targets going to, they're going to turn their eyes, and, you know, who better than a top 10 draft pick to turn your eyes to?
Yeah. And, you know, if he continues to get this kind of opportunity, I mean, the ceiling is the moon, right? Like, Colston Loveland could be a Rondé Gadsden 2.0. We'll see.
Yeah, I think the one thing is, like, we know the ceiling's there. We just saw it, but consistency, right? Like, Rome Odunze is still around. You still have DJ Moore. Like, DeAndre Swift's going to come back. We just don't know with all the weapons that are still there. Luther Burden's going to come back. You know, I haven't really seen much of him yet, but there's still just a lot of weapons. And, you know, I've tried to, in some deeper leagues, I tried to stash Loveland and was waiting, and I dropped him like a week or two ago. You know, I felt like there was going to be this one big game that was going to break out, but I don't think I'm breaking the bank in any fab leagues to, you know, I don't expect this type of production every week moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he's certainly a higher ceiling play than a lot of tight ends that might be available on the wire, but you're right. That floor is just as low as pretty much anybody else that you'd be streaming. One last injury to talk about. The Los Angeles Chargers lost offensive lineman Joe Ault to injury once again. It's been a tough season for the Chargers. They did go out. Now, this is relatively breaking news here because it was a buzzer beater trade for the deadline on Tuesday. We're recording Tuesday night. The Chargers acquired offensive lineman Trevor Penning from the New Orleans Saints to try to bolster the depth there on their front five. But this still feels like it's a downgrade to Justin Herbert and the downfield pass catchers, as well as what's left of the running game in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's a major hit for sure. I mean, you lose both your all-pro tackles. Like, it's going to have a very, very meaningful impact on the offense. You know, Trevor Penning's it's definitely a depth piece, but, you know, and, you know, he probably will get a lot of playing time. But, you know, this offense is going to have to change a little bit. Greg Roman, you know, he's made adjustments in the past. So I have faith in Justin Herbert's a talented quarterback. The coaching staff is fully competent. They just have to make do with what they got. It's just, I feel for Chargers fans out there to lose both your star guys.
Yeah, and, you know, it feels like the Chargers always have something go wrong. And unfortunately this year it's been the injury bug. But, you know, after beating the Chiefs in week one, they looked super promising. And then from there it's kind of sputtered out of the gates after that hot start. So we'll have to monitor the offensive line situation in Los Angeles, especially if you are still holding on any of those Chargers pass catchers, Justin Herbert, et cetera.
Right.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk trade deadline news and some fantasy assets that have traded place and changed their value in real life. Welcome back to Ball Street, the Cubulus Stock Exchange. We're talking real life trades. Usually we talk fantasy trades and trade values. We had a whole bunch of real life trades go down at the trade deadline here just before week 10. Tuesday afternoon was the trade deadline. We record on Tuesday evenings. So we have the pleasure to break some of these trades, which is awesome. We'll start with probably the most notable fantasy asset in former Las Vegas Raiders wide receiver Jakobi Meyers is sent to Jacksonville. He'll join Brian Thomas Jr., De'Ami Brown, Parker Washington, Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne in that Jaguars offense. Obviously, a big win for Meyers, who has been pining to get out of Las Vegas pretty much the whole season and into the last offseason. How does this impact the fantasy landscape, not only for the Jaguars pass catchers, but also for who remains in Las Vegas?
Yeah, so I think for Meyers himself, he's probably held about the same value. I mean, he didn't have the highest value going in with what he had in Las Vegas. And, you know, going into Jacksonville here, you have BTJ with the lingering injuries. Travis Hunter seems to be out of the way with a long-term injury too. So with De'Ami Brown, Parker Washington, and you also have Brenton Strange coming back off of IR, I think it's either next week or the week after, I believe, if he's available. So, you know, it's a crowded situation. So I think Jakobi Meyers himself is relatively about the same value. Those guys, De'Ami Brown, Parker Washington was probably seen as, you know, a guy who was going to see a large target share if this trade didn't go through in the short term. So he takes a big hit, definitely, as far as waiver pickups this week go. And then in Las Vegas, I think there's going to be this perception that, oh, with Myers gone and Brock Bowers just had the biggest week, that Bowers to the moon, he just put up 40 points and it's going to be that every single week from this point forward. That's not going to be the case. I think Genty's going to be involved in the passing game because they're seeing some more success there. They have Trey Tucker, Jack Betch, rookies that they got, Jack Betch and Thornton. Those are two guys that are definitely going to see a little bit of target share that's going to eat into what people think is going to go to Brock Bowers.
I think it would be hard to have Bowers' market value go any higher after this week. Coming into this week, he was one of those guys that's just a set it and forget it tight end, right? Like, you can't do much better than Bowers at tight end when he's healthy. I think the player on the Raiders that this might boost the most is the other tight end, Michael Meyer. I think stands a chance to be a streaming option moving forward, because the Raiders are going to play way more 12 personnel. We saw it last week. They were almost at 60% 12 personnel, meeting both tight ends on the field at the same time. I wouldn't be surprised to see them use Bowers as more of a wide receiver role, and then have, you know, Meyer in line as the traditional tight end role much more often. I think with him on the field more often, it stands to that he'll have more volume and potentially get enough to be a viable streaming option on a week-to-week basis, maybe like a bye-week cover kind of guy. So that's my take on the whole Raiders passing game situation. I'm not too excited to be heavily invested there if I'm a fantasy manager. But then in Jacksonville, I think Myers is super interesting, especially if BTJ misses time, right? Like, if BTJ misses time, he is pretty close to being an undisputed wide receiver one. Like, Parker Washington had a really nice game last week, has shown some really good chemistry with Lawrence, but I think Myers has the capability to absorb a lot of volume if Brian Thomas Jr. misses time.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't disagree with that. I think that, so what is that value in your mind? Because for me, I think if he gets, let's call it a 25% target share in Jacksonville, he's a wide receiver one, 25 to maybe even 30% target share coming from Trevor Lawrence, that offense. You know, that's, in my eyes, I don't view Jacksonville as highly as I would have hoped to at this point in the season. Something just vibes feel wrong. It's not fully clicking. I would probably still hold Jacoby somewhere in the probably just flex play.
Yeah, I kind of think of him as, now granted, this is a huge caveat, right? And I said it several times, if Brian Thomas Jr. misses time, right, I think he's a low-end wide receiver to high-end flex play. I think that he could be a top 25 wide receiver in the case that he's getting that kind of volume. I still feel like Jacksonville is going to be one of those teams that's just going to want to run first. They're going to want Trevor Lawrence to be more of a game manager than a gunslinger, which is why why I have an interesting name in one of my buy high hold section. So, but yeah, I think that Myers has the ceiling to be like a wide receiver two, top 25 wide receiver. But he would need some things to break his way in Jacksonville. Certainly. I like the situation better than Las Vegas, because I think Lawrence is a slight upgrade from Geno Smith. But we'll have to wait and see. It'll be interesting to see how that develops.
Yep. Agreed.
Former New Orleans Saints wide receiver Rashid Shaheed dealt to the Seattle Seahawks. The Torrey Horton hype train was short-lived, huh?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think as far as perceived value-wise, I think so. I think Shaheed's going to, you know, eat into some of the time on the field. But I'm still on board with the talent that's there. And, you know, if Seattle continues to throw the ball and Sam Darnold with the volume that they're getting, sure, the slice of the pie could be a little bit smaller, and I think he can still get decent returns at a very talented young receiver in Torrey Horton.
I think this is a massive upgrade for Shaheed. I really, really like what I saw out of Darnold. The Seahawks in general have been one of those teams that I don't know if they were in a blind spot for me because they're on the West Coast, or if I just, you know, saw one report about, you know, their offensive line and was like, I'm out. But they have looked really, really good under Kubiak, and it's just, they're fun to watch. That was really the first Seahawks game, the primetime game this past weekend. It was really the first Seahawks game that I've gotten to sit down and watch from start to finish. And they are a fun offense to watch, other than the Charbonnet Walker stuff. I don't, you know.
Glad to not
I'm not
have
too
a
jaded on
that.
I'm not too jaded on that because I don't have, you know, as much Kenneth Walker as a lot of other fantasy managers. But Sam Darnold looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, that first half was on pace to be, he was perfect completion rate and four touchdowns through almost all the way through halftime, I think, if not past into the third quarter. Like, it was incredible. The offense is absolutely clicking on all cylinders. I think the defense is incredible. And, you know, you really want to get a piece of when there's this momentum that's building within a team and the quarterback's had a lot of confidence and, you know, you're adding another skill player. Like, this team is absolutely on the ascending path. And, you know, Shaheed is the guy that I've always kind of kept my eye on as like a really cheap, like dart throw in, you know, the later rounds of the draft. But, I still think that even if, target share might be a little bit smaller than what it was in New Orleans, it's not like that was really a great, you know, opportunity there. I think it's going to be an uptick for him. I think Torrey Horton's probably not going to have the same, you know, two touchdown week that, I mean, it was a breakout game for sure, and I think there's going to be a pretty steady rotation. The one that I think is probably taking the biggest hit is Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, I wonder if we see him miss more time than it was originally expected, based on the Seahawks going out and getting a receiver. I think there may be cause for concern that this injury stretches a little longer than we had maybe hoped. And certainly from a performance standpoint, he hasn't exactly blown the doors off up in Seattle. So I agree with you there. I think Cooper Kupp is at risk to lose some volume. How does this change things in New Orleans? Tyler Shuck running that offense, Taysom Hill more involved this past weekend than he has been recently. Where do the Saints stand?
Yeah, so I covered the Saints for what we saw this last week, and you know, Shuck looked, you know, like a fully capable. His throws were on point. He's absolutely capable. I think the game plan coming in was kind of, you know, put them at a disadvantage. They really got behind the sticks early, and you know, later in the game as the game progressed, when Shuck was asked to make some kind of more difficult throws toward the boundaries or into tight windows, he put them right on the money. So I think it's really just going to be a game planning thing. And with Shaheed out, I think a lot of that's going to go back to what we saw in the first few weeks with Juwan Johnson. We didn't really see Shuck take any real deep shots, but there could be a really healthy dose of Chris Olave if he stays healthy. But if there are some deep shots raiding in the wings, and Devon Bailey might really kind of sneak into the back end of the picture.
Yeah. He's a name that I don't want to say excited about in Denver, but he was at least on my radar while he was in Denver. He's done a little bit. I think he's caught a couple touchdowns in New Orleans on very limited volume. Big bodied wide receiver, somebody that doesn't necessarily fit that same Shaheed mold of like a downfield, like take the top off kind of guy, but certainly a name to watch if he gets more reps, gets more snaps. The Saints went out of their way to acquire him. This is a bad football team that gave up draft assets to acquire Vele before the season. So from a general manager standpoint, they probably want to get him involved because of how they invested in him. Now, that is us implying that the Saints management is competent and has a plan. But I mean, who knows?
Yep. It is a big question mark.
We'll move on to really the blockbuster of the deadline. The New York Jets shipped cornerback Sauce Gardner to the Colts. In addition to several draft picks, the Jets also received wide receiver Adonai Mitchell in return. This seems like a sneaky deep league target. Mitchell, I think, fell out of favor in Indianapolis with the whole goal line drop situation. Never really saw the same volume after that. And I think a change of scenery might be good for the young receiver. He's got the talent. I think that, especially with the lack of pass catchers in New York, he could get some more snaps than he did in Indianapolis, certainly.
Yeah, for sure. I was in on Adonai Mitchell as a prospect coming into the league. And, you know, I think the landing spot was kind of tough. They didn't really have the quarterback situation figured out. And like you said, he just kind of stumbled down the depth chart. I think it was a lot of just unfortunate and, you know, the other guys stepping up. But, you know, it is a great opportunity with the Jets. They really only have Garrett Wilson when he's back, and they'll have, I think, Mason Taylor is probably the other main name in the mix there. I think the other issue is just volume and Justin Fields, right? Like, how much are they still? We thought Breece Hall was going to be a huge name trade candidate today, but he wasn't. There wasn't really any news, and he's still there. So, I mean, things could get really interesting if they continue to be a run first team. Then, you know, the volume is a little bit tricky there, and Mitchell would be a kind of desperation flex play. But if they kind of have to move and shape their offense for, you know, what the landscape looks like now with the defense and how many guys they just moved today, you know, they could have to start leading into the pass more, despite Aaron Glenn's wants.
Yeah, that was the thing that kind of lit my eyes up a little bit on Mitchell is, you know, they just dealt their two best defensive players. Like, they might be like as bad as they were before, they might be even worse now. So we might see a lot of the pass game. It might be one of those things where I don't know if they feel the need to evaluate Justin Fields. Like, hey, what do we have here? Like, what is your true capability as a passer? But I like the landing spot for Mitchell, certainly a lot more than the Colts. And we'll see if he can jump into that wide receiver two conversation. Because really his only competition there behind Garrett Wilson for wide receiver two is Alan Lazard, who, if roster trends continue the way they have the past couple seasons, will probably get cut and signed by the Pittsburgh here in a couple weeks anyway. So we'll see.
That's a good shout. Yep.
Speaking of Pittsburgh, the Steelers sign Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Couldn't get a wide receiver in the trade market, so they sign one off the free agency market. Is there any chance that MVS is fantasy relevant here in the final few weeks of the season?
Sure, there's a chance, but I call it a very slim chance. You know, I think this offense runs, the passing offense runs through DK, Jonnu Smith, you know, the tight ends. It seems like Washington is really carving out a little bit of a stead there. You know how Arthur Smith is. So, you know, MVS could eat into some of that Calvin Austin type of workload, you know. But, I mean, Roman Wilson, you know, he just made a mistake or two this past week. So, you know, I think there's an opportunity there for him to work his way onto the field. But we'll see. I don't have too high hopes for him.
Yeah, he's certainly not a guy who's going to be on radars in 10-team leagues. And we're talking more like, you know, 15, 20-team type deep leagues that maybe MVS gets a sniff in the Pittsburgh offense. But it's not like they're a huge downfield, you know, they're not taking huge downfield shots other than maybe to DK every now and then. But we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk fluctuating values of fantasy assets after this. Welcome back to Ball Street, the QB List Stock Exchange. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with Chris Helly talking stock values, market values of fantasy assets. you know, who's falling, who's rising. Buy low, sell high. That's what we're all about. Make sure you check out QBList.com. One of our, we'll call it a flagship. I think it's fair to call it a flagship. One of our flagship features is the What We Saw column. What We Saw, Chris and I both work on every week. It's your weekly shortcut to smarter fantasy football decisions. The QB List team of analysts watches every NFL game, goes beyond the box score to deliver the most important observations, giving you actionable, contextual insights that shape your next lineup move. Make sure to check us out on QBList.com and in the fantasy football subreddit every Monday morning, where Redditors have access to our entire team of analysts. It's almost like an AMA. Drop a question in there, and whoever you're asking about, whatever game, whoever covered that game is going to answer your question with, you know, their insights, what they saw. Don't forget about all of our weekly web content on QBList.com, including the start sit columns, weekly rankings. We've had top 10 rankings across the industry on Fantasy Pros a few times this season. We've expanded the QB List podcast network. Jay does a great job with Sunday Best. Brian and his crew do an awesome job with the Waiver Wire show and the weekly forecast. And of course, you're listening to Ball Street. Lastly, make sure to check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/theQBList, where we're posting all of our podcast recordings, and follow us on our newest media, TikTok, @QB_list. All right, Chris, we've got a handful of guys here that we got to crank through, already almost 30 minutes, past 30 minutes into the pod. Let's talk about guys whose stock has fallen this week and who we might be looking to buy low. We'll start in Chicago. Rome Odunze and DeAndre Swift. Swift missed this past game with an injury, and Kyle Manungai popped off. And then, of course, Odunze might as well have missed. He scored just 0 fantasy points on 3 targets and no receptions. And in the meantime, Colston Loveland breaks out. So what are we doing with these two guys in Chicago after, you know, their down week?
Yeah, I think both are kind of hold, don't panic. It just goes to show, like, the floor in this offense is absolutely 0 if you miss time, or even in Rome's case, you know, the opportunities just don't present themselves. Like with Swift, I own him in a few of my leagues, and I'm still going to be starting him. It's just my expectations are a little bit tempered with with Manungai popping off. We now don't really know what the workload is going to look like in the backfield, at what that split's going to be. And with Rome, it's, you know, he's still the guy. I still trust that. It just, you know, there might be an off week in there, which is a little bit scary, but I still think it's a high producing offense. And, you know, we just saw they put up however many points this last week. You know, opportunities didn't go his way, chalk it up, but I'd still throw him right back in the lineup.
Rome's a little scary. 3 of his past 4 games, he's had 2 or fewer receptions. We'll go through the game log here. Against the Commanders, 2 for 32, no touchdowns. Against the Saints, 2 for 31, no touchdowns. Against Baltimore, 7 for 114, that's more like it. And then, of course, this past week, 0 receptions, 0 yards, 0 touchdowns. I agree with you. I think that he can get back to that elite volume of getting 8, 9, 10, 11 targets per game. But scoring 5 touchdowns through the first 4 games of the season, I think, is variance, right? Like, that's touchdown variance. The regression has come for him violently. I think it'll start to level out again after, you know, moving forward from week 9 onward.
Yep, fully agree.
We'll move on to Washington. And, you know, Jaden Daniels goes out. Obviously, his stock has fallen because he's probably missing at least a few games, maybe the rest of the season. But that affects the ancillary pieces for the Commanders. And one of those also missed last week. That's Terry McLaurin. How do we feel about Scary Terry for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. He was holding out through the start of preseason training camps, and you know, that seems to have reared its ugly head with some injury problems. He missed a lot of time. He's missing more time even right after he comes back. Now the starting quarterback's hurt. You know, we know what we're getting with Marcus Mariota, and he's going to be able to run the offense, but it's going to look a little different than with Jaden Daniels. Jaden was willing to take those deep shots down the field toward the end of last season. That was a lot of what Terry's production came from. It was deep balls that he brought in touchdowns, and that was where he really ascended into wide receiver one fantasy territory toward the back half of last year. Now with the injury history, or the current injuries and the new quarterback, I don't know if I fully trust it. And, you know, it's a tough situation where I probably hold him on my bench and, you know, even give it a week of him staying on the bench with Mariota to see what the offense looks like before I trust putting him back in my lineup. And I'm even flirting with the idea of dropping him. Like, it's scary situation for Terry.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm on the record as being pretty high on him in draft season. As luck would have it, I really only got him in about 25% of leagues. So I'm not as affected as I probably should have been by his lack of performance. But yeah, in those, you know, small handful of leagues where I do have him, I am toying with the idea of dropping him because it's just, there are better ways to use that roster spot at this point in the season. We move on to running backs. J.K. Dobbins in Denver is starting to hear footsteps behind him on the depth chart. R.J. Harvey continues to see his role grow, not unexpectedly. Usually that's kind of what happens with rookie running backs, is they kind of ease in. If they're not the bell cow to begin the season, they're kind of eased into the offense and their role grows throughout the season. That's what we're seeing in Denver with Harvey. How does that affect Dobbins' fantasy outlook?
Yeah, so I was a RJ Harvey believer coming into the season. This is another situation kind of similar to Jordan Mason, that we thought there was going to be a slow time split through a lot of the season, and yeah, the potential for the RB1 job to kind of tip the other way. And, you know, RJ Harvey, we know he's a pass catcher. We know he's an explosive runner, but Dobbins seems to always have a punch back. He always seems to, you know, he is a very, very talented running back that's not going to just straight up lose his job. But this is becoming more and more of a 50-50 time split. You know, the backfield was really, really awkward last year with the three-man rotation, and it seemed like Sean Payton's still trying to do that a little, but, you know, Bidet just hasn't looked anything resembling someone who deserves to be on the field, in my opinion. So I think it's going to be a continued 50-50 time split, which I'm completely happy with for both options.
And, of course, I talk about how, you know, rookies are supposed to be eased into the offense and their role is supposed to grow throughout the season. Well, we moved to New England, and Travion Henderson is still battling for playing time, really, you know, having to scratch tooth and nail to try to get any sort of burn, even with Ramondre Stevenson out. You know, the team goes and elevates Terrell Jennings from the practice squad, and guess who gets the goal line carries? I'll give you a hint, it's not Travion Henderson. You know, the Patriots were linked to, you know, running back trades at the deadline. Nothing came to fruition. Are they finally going to turn this backfield over to Travion Henderson, or are we just going to be sitting here with our, you know, sitting on our hands the rest of the season as Henderson managers?
I honestly have zero pulse on the situation because Henderson looked very explosive. You know, we talked about a lot in preseason where he is an exciting player that we know that he can be, you know, big play potential if he's in open space, but there seems to be an issue with the offense they're trying to run and the way they're trying to use him and his skill set. So it seems like there just seems to be a butting ahead situation that doesn't seem to be going anywhere in my eyes. You know, even when Ramondre's fumbling twice a game, they're still going to be stubbornly putting him back out there for over half the snaps. Henderson's not going to get any of the goal line work. So it's really just a question as to whether we see him get more involved in the passing game, screen game, get him out in open space and him earn his fantasy relevance through explosive plays and high value touches rather than through volume.
Well, that's a big ask for a rookie, and hopefully Mike Brable sees the light here soon. We would really love for Henderson to get more touches. Mike, if you're listening, please do it. Chris, give me one name that you're most interested in buying low as we creep towards the fantasy football trade deadline.
Yeah, so I'll give a quarterback because, you know, you really want to grab a steady quarterback for the rest of the season and into fantasy playoffs. You want this guy to, you know, fully rely on. And I think a great buy low situation is right after the Joe Alt injury is to go find the Justin Herbert manager and see if you can get him for a pretty cheap cost. You know, the immediate perception is this offense lost both of its tackles, deep play potential. As you mentioned, Brett's going to be gone. They lost both of their starting running backs and they've been throwing out, you know, kind of whoever they can in the past few weeks. And that's all going to take a hit. And the thought process is that it's going to be a one-dimensional offense. But for me, I'm fully okay with that. I think Justin Herbert's an incredible quarterback. He's going to be able to make do with what he's got. And you know what we're seeing from him more this year than in previous years is that he's willing to take off and use his legs. In the past, he's been pretty stubborn in trying to use his arm. And now that he's lost Joe Alt on the left side there, I think he's going to be, you know, one of the more mobile quarterbacks, and he's going to get a decent floor of production just through the work on the ground. And we know he's got all the weapons through the air. So the Alt injury almost seems like a funnel situation. And I think that the perception of Justin Herbert is going to go down, and I want to buy in on that.
Yeah, I like that. And to your point, the floor has risen on Justin Herbert with that rushing. It's been outstanding to watch. It's been outstanding to roster. And not for nothing, Greg Roman has a history of working with mobile quarterbacks and kind of designing offense around their mobility from his time in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. Speaking of Baltimore and Lamar Jackson, my buy low is Ravens wide receiver Zay Flowers. Flowers, the past several weeks, hasn't topped 75 receiving yards since week two, hasn't caught a touchdown since week one. So you may be able to get him much cheaper than you would have several weeks ago, certainly cheaper than what he would have cost during draft season. I think that better days are coming for Flowers now that Lamar is back. The Ravens' schedule softens up significantly here over the next several weeks. They have yet to play Cincinnati twice. We've seen what teams can do against the Bengals, so that'll be playoff time. I love the idea of grabbing Zay Flowers and hoping that some positive regression as far as touchdowns comes. I know he's not a huge red zone threat. Mark Andrews is kind of overtaking that role in Baltimore as usual, but I do think that the Ravens will continue to get Flowers involved and hopefully on a more consistent basis than what it's been so far this season. I know this kind of feels like a homer pick coming from a guy with a Ravens jersey in the background, but certainly Zay Flowers is a guy that I'm targeting on the fantasy trade market.
Oh yeah, I'm fully on board with getting on the Baltimore bandwagon here. You know, the schedule lightening up, Lamar coming back healthy. And Flowers and Lamar are like best friends. Like you see all the clips of them off the field. They're you know, two peas in a pod whenever they're together. So I think I would trust the volume to see an uptick. Anytime that Lamar is kind of play broken down and scramble drill, Flowers seems to always be the outlet option. And, you know, he's an explosive guy in open space. He's another guy that can really earn some value through just, you know, very limited opportunities. So if those opportunities go up, value is going to be absolutely higher to come.
Absolutely. Let's move on to guys whose stock rose this past week with outstanding performances. And we'll start in Seattle. Sam Darnold and Torrey Horton looked amazing in prime time, beating up on the Commanders. Horton pulled in two touchdowns. Darnold threw four touchdowns before halftime. And like we talked about earlier, the Seattle offense was clicking on all cylinders. Looked so much fun to watch. Talk to me about Darnold and Horton and how their stock has risen.
Yeah, I mean, Darnold, we thought before the season there was going to be some concerns about, you know, it was Kevin O'Connell and Minnesota propping him up. We're not too sure how he's going to, you know, handle himself out in Seattle. He's he's been incredible. He's the same guy. Torrey Horton's an incredible receiver out there. I think that the scheme is working great. You know, the running game really isn't productive at all, but it seems like it's doing the job of, you know, holding the defense at arm's length while they're able to open up space in the back end. Darnold's been absolutely systematic in hitting every throw. And, you know, I had a sneaking suspicion that this was going to be, you know, Horton's breakout week. And I threw him in a flex spot this last week, and I was feeling great. It was a little sad to see the game script kind of lead away from that in the second half, and lost by 2 points in that matchup. But, you know, Seattle offense as a whole, absolutely soaring. Not even mentioning the number one receiver in football right now, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. He's probably, you know, top five talent in the league. That was something that also was a little bit controversial. We weren't too sure about before the season, but absolutely lock that down. We're all aboard.
Looking at running backs who saw massive upticks in their volume this week, there's two of them that come to mind immediately. Cincinnati Bengals running back Chase Brown, and then Carolina Panthers running back Rico Dowdle. Both certainly earned their volume upticks. Brown came more as a result of injury to Samaje Perine, whereas Dowdle had just kind of played his way into more touches. Talk to me about both those guys and how their fantasy outlook has changed for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so Chase Brown was one that, you know, if you drafted him, this is, you know, the best thing that could have happened was Perine getting hurt, because, you know, that time slip was just absolutely brutal. And that's probably the second best thing. The first best thing was them getting Joe Flacco and, you know, resurrecting that offense from the dead. And, you know, if he's going to be playing 90% of snaps or higher, he played 60 of the 62 snaps this last week. You know, the volume's there, check down work, running workload. If it's all there, you know, he's right back to where he used to be. This offense was absolutely in the gutter, and it's now back to life. And that's honestly kind of a very similar situation with Carolina, that we didn't think there was really any type of volume that was going to be coming out of that offense in that backfield. And if that was going to be a split workload there between Dattle and Chuba Hubbard, I think both probably would have been very, very tough to start in fantasy. But we saw this last week that Rico Dattle seemed to have that knockout punch against the Chuba, really take over the backfield and drive it home. So that's an exciting one that I picked up earlier in the season in one of my leagues. And I'm feeling pretty comfortable moving forward. I think, you know, that's an offense, or this a team that's 5-4. You know, Carolina is not the same Carolina that we have this perception of. I mean, the Chiefs are 5-4. So you kind of have to like readjust your expectations here and really just kind of identify that Dattle has been extremely productive. And if he's kind of led the backfield and he's taking over, I see him as a mid-range RB2 with, you know, a good upside if the matchups are there.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a potential to be a top 15 back the rest of the way, certainly, if the Panthers keep feeding him the way they have.
Definitely. Absolutely.
We'll move on. Give us one name that you're looking to sell high after this week's performance.
Yeah, I think I'd turn my eyes toward tight ends, and I'd probably sell Sam Laporta. You know, this was the first time that he played 100% of snaps. And, you know, this is another offense that has a lot of mouths to feed. And I have a lot of shares of Jahmyr Gibbs, and this was brutal for me across my leagues. You know, that lack of volume is not going to stick. I think there's going to be, you know, this is an offense that there's always going to be a shift in volume and usage. Laporte has been riding hot the last few weeks, and I don't know if I can fully trust that all the way through the end of the fantasy season. So I'd probably be looking to cash out for a cheaper option, even be open to considering riding some waivers through the fantasy playoffs and try to acquire a main core piece, whether that be even a quarterback or running back receiver, rather than the tight end position.
Yeah, and I feel like tight end has been relatively deep this year, with all the options that have kind of emerged, whether it be Andrews or Rondae Gadsden. It just there should be opportunity to, whether it's a streaming tight end or, you know, a guy who you've been able to pick up through waivers to supplement your bench. There should be opportunity to move Laporta and maybe improve elsewhere for sure.
Yep. Who you got?
My sell high is Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver T. Higgins. May seem counterintuitive. He's been absolutely stellar since Joe Flacco took over. But I think the main thing here is the touchdown variance. He's caught four touchdowns in the Bengals' past three games. You know, they've been a very high-scoring offense. I don't want to take that away from them, but you know, we've talked so much about the volume that Ja'Marr Chase continues to get week in and week out. And now if Chase Brown is going to be there and assume some of that volume also, I think there's just less meat on the bone for Higgins. And I do think that the touchdown pendulum is going to start swinging away from him as the coming weeks get here as well. So for no other reason than really just touchdown variance and the fact that the Bengals offense can't play any better than it has. The defense certainly can, but the offense can't get any better than it has been the past several weeks. I'm selling high on T. Higgins and trying to get, you know, obviously a solid return in exchange. After the bye in week 10, the Bengals face the Steelers, the Patriots, the Ravens, the Bills, and the Ravens. So a little bit of an improved set of defenses there. So we'll see how that goes moving forward. But Higgins is the guy that I'm looking to move.
Yeah, Higgins is a tricky one. He's always one that I've been too afraid to you know, get in bed with him. He's dealt with injuries, the reliability, you know, that's the name of the game of fantasy is really what's the probability and what's the floor ceiling of these players. And Higgins has the floor of either not being as involved as you would like him to be or getting hurt. And that's just a really scary guy to take through the most important part of the fantasy season.
And before we sign off, Chris, give me one guy that if you could have any fantasy player on your roster for the stretch run for the playoffs, just for the second half of the NFL season, who would it be and why?
I'll go back to Josh Jacobs. This is just a guy that I think is one of the most reliable, inevitable fantasy options out there. You know, they're the untouchable guys of Christian McCaffrey. You know, you're not going to get your hands on him, but I think Josh Jacobs is a guy that if you have, you're not selling high on him. I think if you can even buy high on him in a trade package, you should. Green Bay is an offense that will produce. Like, there's one way or another, and it's going to go through the ground. They have high explosive options on the outside, but there will always be the running back production on the ground, and Jacobs is one of the most talented running backs in the league on a very good offense. So for me, it's just one of the safest options you can have.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm right there with you. I am invested in Jacobs from draft season, and I have no intentions of dealing him in any place that I have him already. One name that I am looking at as a hold or a buy high is Jaguars running back Travis Etienne Jr. I love Liam Cohen's offense. I think that the Jaguars have made leaps and strides. They've been inconsistent, certainly, but I do think that they have come a long way under Cohen. And a lot of that is through the ground game. They are going to be one of those clock management teams that relies on their solid running game and a good defense to win football games. And I think that the volume that we saw from Etienne at the beginning of the season is going to start creeping back. You know, he started the year with 16, 14, 16, and 19 carries over the first 4 weeks, saw it dip a little bit with 12, 12, and 8 the next three games. And then this past week against the Raiders, 22 carries. I think that I want the running back in the Liam Cohen system. I've always said that, you know, throughout this year after seeing what he's done with the Buccaneers last year with Bucky Irving and Rashad White both being top 24 running backs. I'm really excited for the second half for Etienne And I want him on my rosters if I can get him.
Yeah, I mean, from the outside, before draft season, the question marks were, is it going to be Tank Bigsby? Is it going to be Bashel Tootin? They traded Bigsby to the Eagles, and, you know, Tootin's had his opportunities and really hasn't done much with it. The one steady thing has been ETN. And I fully agree. It's an offense that, you know, I had mentioned before wasn't fully clicking in the passing game, but I would agree. I have Travis Etienne in our QB list league. I am very comfortable holding him, taking him through the rest of the season.
Beautiful. Well, that does it for our week 9 episode of Ball Street. Chris, let the people know where to find you and your work.
Yeah, you can find me on all my work is on QBList.com. Do what we saw articles. I'm on Twitter or X at Chris Helly QBL. And I'm active on our Reddit page and in our Discord.
Excellent. Yeah, you can find me in a lot of the same places at Fade That Man on Twitter. Very active in the football or pitcher list Discord. And of course, what we saw on Reddit Monday mornings. Make sure you check it out and feel free to ask any questions about any game. I try to chime in several times a day. Try to be as accessible as possible. I think that's one of the important things about this community is that we're all pretty accessible and you know, nobody's too high and mighty to answer questions. So I think that's something that is of value of this QB list community, something that I'm really proud of what we're building certainly here. So that does it for Ball Street. We'll catch you next week where we'll talk, you know, the buy lows and the sell highs on the fantasy football market. Thanks for tuning in. For Chris, I'm Brett. See you later.